You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, before we begin, in case you missed it, last week I taught a webinar for free about co-producing on Broadway, and it was our most popular webinar yet. If you missed it and are interested in learning more about the ins and outs of co-producing on Broadway, drop me an email at ken@theproducersperspective.com. That's ken@theproducersperspective.com. We'll send you a link. It's a pretty good one. Now, on with the podcast.
I want to be a producer with a hit show on Broadway. I want to be a producer.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hello, everybody. My name is Kent Davenport. This is the Producer's Perspective podcast. I'm super excited to have someone I've known for a very long time on the podcast today, the Tony-nominated choreographer, Mr. Sergio Trujillo. Welcome, Sergio.
Thank you, Ken. I'm thrilled to be here.
So Sergio has a litany of shows on his resume, A Bronx Tale, On Your Feet, Adam's Family, the Tony Award-winning Memphis, and that little show that wasn't a success at all called Jersey Boys. This season, he's going to put Summer on Broadway in the spring. So, Sergio, let's just start about the beginning. Like most choreographers out there, you started as a dancer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my first show was on Broadway was Jerome Robbins Broadway, almost 30 years ago, actually.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So I didn't have a long career. I was at the Expanse over 10 years. My first show was Jerome Robbins Broadway, and my last show was Fosse. So it doesn't get as good as that.
From Jerome to Bob.
I know. The masters of, you know, in terms of choreographer, directors.
And where were you from originally?
So I'm originally from Colombia. I was born in Colombia. And then at the age of 12, my family immigrated to Toronto. You know, it was easier to get into Canada than America at that time. And that's where my whole family, all my family lives there now. And then at the age of 24, 25, I moved to New York to, you know, to come and be a dancer and give it a try, you know, see if I can make it in the great white way. And here we are 30 years later.
And where did your love of dance begin? Like, what was the first time that you experienced dance or were like, oh my God, I got to do that?
Well, you know, I mean, dance has always been a part of my family. My family, I mean, they're insane. They're you know, I love them to death. Yeah, they're just, you know, my family is music and dance. You go to a wedding, you go to, even if you go to my sister's on a weekend, everyone's gathered around and they're always listening to music. So music and dance has always been part of my family. But the first time I saw dance was at a theme park in Canada. It was called Canada's Wonderland. It had just opened and I went to see this. One of my friends took me to see the show called The Best of Broadway. And I watched the show and I just thought, oh my God. You know, and growing up in Latin America, we're not big on musicals. My family was not big on going to the theater. You know, social economics is just not in our radar. That's not what we do. That's not what our families did. So having the opportunity of going to see this show in a theme park, but doing the show called The Best of Broadway, and I saw those guys and I thought, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to do. So that was my first time that I saw dance.
And you were how old then?
I was 18.
So that's very late for a dancer to get started. So what's the first thing you do? You're 18 years old, you're fully formed now, right? Because so many dancers start very young and their bodies are formed by, it seems, the classes and all the work they do. So what's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing I did, you know, I had a series of auditions. Actually, I had a sort of trial audition so I saw that show and I thought, oh my God, oh, I can do that. I'd never taken a dance class in my life. So I found out they were having auditions. I went, you know, I think it was like maybe a year later, and I auditioned. I made up my own combination. I had no training. I choreographed my own routine to Earth, Wind & Fire's Fantasy. And
Of course.
What a perfect song. Yeah, and it's my theme song. You know, it's like if anybody's ever going to play my song, it's going to be, that's my theme song. But anyway, so I went to that audition and I flailed around and, you know, they saw this kid with all of this immense talent. So, you know, they took me aside and they said, you know, you're not right for this. You need to go train. And that's what I did. So I took it upon myself to, you know, I became obsessed with dance. And I was always catching up. I was always feeling like, you know, I'm trailing behind. There's guys that have been dancing for 10, you know, 15 years before I got there. People have been dancing since they were 4 or 5 years old. So I just became obsessed with it and it was always just really focused and really focused on what I wanted to do. That's why I came to New York. I came to New York to, I took time off from school. I was going to university. I was studying chiropractic. I went to University of Toronto and studied biochemistry. Then I went to chiropractic school. But during that whole time, I know, crazy, right? During that whole time, I was studying dance off on the side. And really incredibly focused in this moment. I was like an Olympic athlete.
You're probably the only choreographer out there that can give his dancers a combination and an adjustment.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's so fascinating because you failed your first audition, right? You didn't get it. And then your training process, you were always behind. It sounds like you were the back of the class or the end of the list. Yet you kept going despite all that, where a lot of people were like, I'm not as good as everyone else. I'm going to give up. What kept you going through all that?
I think that there's a little part of all of us that are still here in New York pounding the pavement, you know, that are still working so hard, you know, that are, we're always just, you know, trying to beat the odds. I think that's the game of, and I think that's what keeps us going. You know, there's a quality that I think the people that succeed at anything they do, it's that thing, you know, is not the it factor. You know, I think the it factor works for actors, singers, dancers, but I think for us that continue to do what we do, you know, you're such an established producer, I'm established choreographer, and we've worked very hard to get here. I think had we paid attention to the no's, to the obstacles, I think we would have stopped, but I just kept going. I think there's always that little voice in me that said, you can do it. You know, as you know, crazy as that may sound, but it is that thing, you know. Also, you know, coming from Colombia, you know, you're a poor kid and you just weather it all, you know, basically, you know, growing up in a country that is so poor and you see your parents work so hard and, you know, they're working as a factory and they're doing 3 jobs and you see your parents work so hard and you just think, you know, they can do it, I can do it.
That's an amazing story to think about, you as a poor kid in Colombia and now look at where you are today. So you get to New York, you start as a dancer, you obviously get some big success pretty quick, but that's not enough for you. You decide you want to be a choreographer as well. When did that happen? I know you choreographed your first Earth, Wind, and Fire audition sequence, so we know you had instincts early on. I may ask you to shoot a little video of that later, but when did you realize, okay, now I can do this? Now I want to choreograph. I want to do what these people are teaching me to do. When did that happen?
I even before I took classes, even before I did that audition at the age of 18 years old, I was choreographing numbers for our variety show in high school, and I even choreographed the Dream Ballet in Oklahoma. I'd never taken a dance class before. So I think that there was always that part of me that wanted to create, that wanted to have the creative freedom of expression, not only by dancing, but also by creating. And I've always had that part in me. I just think that it was a matter of figuring out at which point was I ready to move on from being a dancer and then moving on to becoming a choreographer, where you are, you know, you have the control, you have the freedom of expression. You're not being an instrument to a choreographer, but you are, in essence, the creator. And so during the time that I was dancing, I began to plant the seed of assisting other choreographers, of watching other choreographers, of seeing how they work. You know, watching Chris Chadman when I did Guys and Dolls on Broadway because I danced in that show, or watching Robbie Marshall when I danced for him in Kiss of a Spider Woman, or we did encores. I assisted him when he was doing Annie. Oh, I can't remember. Shoot, we did a Disney television special. But you know, and Jerry Mitchell, Michael Peters, Debbie Allen, Vince Patterson, all of these choreographers that I was working with, you know, I was always watching them. Even my last show, Fosse, when we did Fosse, Andy Blankenbuehler and I would stand on the side and we would try to figure out how to make this show better. So, and I knew then too that was going to be my last show. So, you know, it wasn't just that, you know, and when I danced, I was, you know, I was madly in love with dance. I mean, it was like, I loved it so much, you know, it's just like when you dance, I mean, you got to love it. Like when you do, you know, when you're a musician, you just gotta love it. But it was the same way when, you know, so my mind was always just thinking, what would I do? How would I do that? How would I fix that? So,
well, first of all, a slight digression. I have to say, having watched you dance in a number of those shows, it was very obvious that you loved what you did. You're an extraordinary dancer. So tell me a little bit about this transition, though. How hard was it for you to basically say to everybody, okay, I have a very successful career as a dancer. You could have done shows after Fosse, I am sure, many. And I'm sure many people tried to get you to do them. You were like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm going to choreograph now. How did you get people to take you seriously, to give you a try? What was that transition like?
You know, I think that, again, in life, you sort of have to make decisions. And I think that you have to have a really clear vision and path. And so I knew that When I did Fosse, I knew that was going to be my last show. I had made a decision that I wanted to choreograph and that I was going to choreograph. I knew that being a choreographer in New York City was extremely competitive. Having, you know, worked with Jerry and Mitchell and being there at his auditions, danced in some of the auditions. I mean, I was in the creative team and his reproduction team when he did the audition for Guys and Dolls to choreograph on Broadway. Chris Chadman ended up choreographing. But so having seen that, you know, that Jerry was competing, Rob Marshall was competing, Rob Ashford, Kathleen Marshall, I was like, oh my God, well, I'm not going to be able to compete with these guys. I just got here. So I'm Canadian. You know, I'm Colombian, Canadian, American. I'm United Nations. No, I thought, you know, okay, so I'm either going to stay in New York and try and really like compete against all of these guys who've been at it for 15 years already, or am I going to be a big fish in a small pond? So I decided to choreograph in Toronto, in Canada. So I was asked to, if I would choreograph a revival of West Side Story at Stratford Festival. During the time that I was doing Fosse, you know, I'm like, oh, but I'm doing Fosse. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to ask for a leave of absence. They gave me the leave of absence. That production of Stratford was very successful. And from that, by working at Stratford, and I got my first big choreographic job, Peggy Sue Got Married in the West End. So that, you know, so by taking that chance of saying, you know what, so then let me give it a try in Canada and see, you know, I had, you know, I felt like by assisting all of these different choreographers, I had gotten my master's in choreography, you know, because it's, but also about part of learning and really is by doing. So I've either stayed in New York and did workshops or readings, which are, it's when you really have to deliver, you know, when you're really in previews and you're really trying to figure out how to fix those numbers and you're watching your work and you're working with a team, when the show is in production is when you really learn. It's like, sure, it's like a doctor. It's like, you know, you can study the books, but it's not until you start doing that you actually learn. And so I felt like I got a great, great education by doing it outside of New York. And so Canada afforded me those opportunities.
I love that story because so many many people, I think, when they're pursuing their dreams and their passions, they're like, well, I'm going to stay in New York because this is where I'm just going to do it. And you made a very specific business decision about, oh, the best way for me to be seen, to get better at my craft, is to go somewhere where I'll have more opportunities, where I think so many people just sit here and like, I'm just going to sit here, and they don't get any attention at all. So talk to me a little bit about your process. You know, I think when people think about writers, they go, oh, when a writer creates something, they sit down and they type into their computer. When a musician composes something, they sit down at a piano and they write the music. How does a choreographer, how do you specifically create? What's that process for you?
You know, I think, I mean, the more I've done, the more confident I've become, the more of a habits you get about how you begin to work on a project. And so when my husband Jack Nosworthy was doing Mother Courage at the Public a few years ago, you know, he had a chat with her, and he said, you know, so how do you get into your character? And the essence of it was that, you know, she finds the character through the voice of the character. You know, how does the character speak? And she's an amazing dialectician. I mean, that is, you know, she just, that's, I think that just transforms her. And it was really interesting. So my point is that for me, it's like the way that, so for me, it's, I become restless about how the show moves, how the show dances, how characters dance. And it's really a reaction to the music of the piece. It's also, is my, so for me, it's not about imposing how I dance, how Sergio moves, but rather figuring out, like, what is the language of Hands on a Hard Body? You know, like, what is the language of that show? And what is the language of Memphis? What is the language of Jersey Boys or Invisible Threat? Like, oh, so I try to figure out how do I, that's the first thing. And so I spend, and no matter how many shows I've done, I'm always like a nervous wreck until I get into the rehearsal room, until I get into my pre-production room where I actually start to dance. Like, and it's always, it's like cyclical. It's like a thing. It's like, and no matter what, I lose sleep and I can't sleep. And my husband says, you're going through that thing again where I can't sleep because I'm, you know, I'll say, oh my God, I haven't been able to sleep. Why? What's wrong with me? But it's really because I'm going again through the, I'm creating again. So the minute I walk into that room and I just start to dance, even if I spend 2 hours just sitting there, like just moving a little bit with a couple of the dancers, that's where it begins to, the process begins to germinate for me. Like what, you know, and then I start to find it and I start to create. And sometimes I create more vocabulary, more phrases than I actually do. Now, it's not always just like, you know, me dancing around. You know, there's always, I have the script. I figure out, you know, what section I'm choreographing. I choreograph various. I have a blueprint of each of the numbers. And you know, and it's really, I'm very pragmatic about it. I'm very organized about it. I even block them out so that when I walk into the room, I have a blueprint and then I can play. And I'm very reactive to the dancers, to the actors, to the energy of the room and what people bring to the room.
And with, you know, a lot of writers will allow their actors in rehearsal to improv or ad lib or say something. Sometimes that stuff gets into the script. How often do you allow your actors, or how do the dancers participate in the process during the rehearsals? Are they, do you give them freedom and flexibility? They move around. You're like, oh, that's good. Keep that.
The sacred time that I have in pre-production, those 2-3 weeks that I spend before a project, that's where I do it. That's where I surround myself with a team of maybe two, three dancers that I've watched. Well, I used to be dancers that I knew that had danced with me. Now they're all, I have them all working everywhere else that I can't use them in the room. So I'm starting to look for fresh talent. But it's really, I'm attracted to dancers that are very, very unique, that are fearless about taking your work and bringing their own essence into it. But when I'm in pre-production, I dance full up. I mean, I'm just like in it. I'm 100%. I'm experimenting. I'm moving. I have to dance the material because I have to know what it feels like on the dancers. And then, you know, then I start, and I play in the room, and, you know, I ask the dancers to try this, or I like that. Let's do it. You know, I love the way you've taken my step and you've made it into that. That's good. But I just, you know, here are the arms that I want. So I'm open to it in pre-production. Again, it's my sacred time. It's like going to church. It's just like it is. It's like gospel music. You know, it's just really, really liberating. When I get in rehearsal, I build those phrases. I build the vocabulary. I build the map, the blueprint. You know, I'm mostly open with act. You know, because again, I can't impose the way that something feels good on my body on an actor, because ultimately, what's going to work is what looks good on that actor. And more than anything, what works on the character, whatever character they're portraying. Like John Lloyd Young in Jersey Boys. You know, John was not a dancer. And I spent weeks before we started rehearsals. I mean, John was not a great dancer. I spent 4 weeks, him and I, before we started rehearsals. And I had ideas about what I wanted it to be. But I actually, every single little thing that Johnny did in the show was choreographed. Everything, like when he unbuttoned it, his jacket, when he put it buttoned again, how he grabbed the microphone, where he looked, all of it. The fingers, the position of the fingers, everything. So I had a map before, and I had a phrase is built into it, but it wasn't until I started working with them because I knew that it was important for an audience to buy into the fact they were watching Frankie Valli, as opposed to Sergio being Frankie Valli with a choreographer.
They bought into it so much that he won a Tony Award for that.
I know.
So yes. Well done.
Des Meganoff just reminded me of that. We were auditioning for another show, and I said, you know, I'm not sure that we should hire him. You know, he will need so much work. And he said, yeah, but just remember that, you know, John Lloyd Young won a Tony Award after.
In other words, you did it before, sir.
Yeah.
You could do it again. Yeah. Okay, so you get, you're a little nervous before pre-production, then things get settled a bit. You have your blueprint. How do you feel when the curtain goes up for the first preview and when an audience is about to chime in and how they feel for the first time? Is it an exciting period for you? Nervous again? What's that like?
Again, no matter how many shows I do, I still have the same guttural impulse. Like, you can't, I don't think that any of us can predict. I think we can sort of troubleshoot. We can kind of see the number in the room, and you can see it even when we're in tech rehearsals and you do your first dress rehearsal and you see it. When you have that first audience for me and I look at something, I'll go, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Or, okay, I get it. I think I can do better. Or it's always up for me to reassess. You know, I looked at the whole, you know, I don't nitpick, but I look at the whole piece on its own. And yeah, no, I every time, no matter how many shows I've done, is that first time I see the audience that, you know, you just get a different perspective. It just, like, the stakes are higher. I don't know what it is. You know, you're still examining when you're in the room, then when you're in preview, and I mean, in tech rehearsals, you're still looking at it, you're looking at so many different other factors. But then when you have that first audience, you see the canvas, like you step away from it for a second for the first time. Then you go back and do the touch-ups once you get going in preview. But it never changes, no matter how many times I've done it.
Yeah, I always think it's the first time that first preview of the show is not about you anymore. It's like you're giving up your baby for adoption for that moment. You get to take it back for rehearsal for the day, but it's not yours anymore. You're handing it over.
Yeah.
Sending your kid off to college.
I mean, and ultimately, you know, I think, you know, what we do is not, I mean, is not, you know, we can't be selfish about what we do, because it's not, I think the audiences inform us about, you know, we can have ideas, we can have thoughts, we can have concepts, we may think what works really well, but audiences, you know, really, I mean, if we're really listening to the audience and paying attention, you know, they will inform us about the work.
And how do you listen for response about choreography or shows? Like, what do you just get a sense of the energy in the room? Do you actually physically listen to what they're saying or applause? Or what's the biggest indicator of success or not for you during a preview?
I think ultimately, the first and foremost, the thing that's more important is the piece as a whole. You know, that I think one of the things that I'm not a selfish choreographer, where it's like I am the first to cut choreography out of the show if it's not working. If it's just sort of vamping till ready, if it's vamping till, you know, I may fall in love with different sections of a number, but if they're not working, if they're not telling the story, if not moving the plot along, I'm the first one to cut it. So again, you know, if I'm looking at this great piece of dance, but at the end of that number, if we haven't learned anything, if we haven't really elevated the storytelling, then, you know, I have to really look at it. So, and the audience will inform me of that. But it's not about how they applaud, but it's really how I think that, does it help the narrative? Does it help carry the plot along? Do we learn it? As well as let the audience have joy, you know, like, do we liberate? Do we give them, do we transport them to a different place. And so, you know, I have to look at the whole piece and look at not just each number nitpicking, but really the piece as a whole. And where are we losing the audience? And is it maybe because this section is too long? Are we done? You know, is the choreography interesting enough?
And speaking of looking at the whole piece, are you interested in pursuing the same career path as the Fosses and the Jeromes of being a director as well, director choreographer in the future? Is that what you seem to conquer? I conquered dance. Okay, now I'm going to get, is that what's, I know you're doing some already, but is that what's next for you?
I think being a director choreographer is inevitable for me. When I work with directors like Des Mackinoff or Chris Ashley or Michael Greif and Jerry Mitchell, you know, I just think I have no business because they're just at the top of their game. But I think for me, it's really understanding the types of shows that I can direct and choreograph and that I want to direct and choreograph. And I think for me are those pieces where dance is a big part of the narrative. I think that in the same way that one of the things that I wanted to say when, you know, in terms of moving from a dancer to a choreographer was that, you know, I wanted creative freedom of expression again. You know, I didn't want to be regimented by Fosse's work. I wanted to express myself in my own way. And so as a choreographer, I want to have the creative freedom of expression as a creative force. That means so that I don't necessarily only have to express what I do or what I can do through dance, but dramatically as well, and how I take a piece, an idea, a story, and guide it under my vision. So a really defined specific vision. So I've done it a few times already. Again, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, that I have, I think I'm a great student because I went to school, you know, because I studied. I think there's a part of me that's slightly academic. You know, I think that there are other peers of mine that are gone off and directed and choreographed already, but I don't really want to do it until I feel that I've really studied again. And by collaborating with these great directors, I've learned so much. And it's not just about, there's just so much that goes into directing a show, a musical.
And why do you think it is that so many choreographers go on to be such great directors? Like, what is it? I was actually thinking earlier today that, you know, you started out as a dancer, and I would bet that 99% of all Broadway choreographers started out as dancers, right?
I hope so, yeah.
But I don't think that's the case for directors, right? So it's probably not 90, it's probably, you know, 90 or 70% of all directors started as actors or something. But yet a lot of choreographers go on to be directors and some of Broadway's best that we've ever had. What is it about the choreographic process or that perspective that also allows you to be a great director at the same time?
I mean, when we really think about a musical, you know, when we really think about a musical, I don't know that everyone understands the role of a choreographer in a show, of a talented choreographer in a show. Because I feel like there is a misconception about what a choreographer does in a Broadway show. And I think that, you know, it's not just about doing dance numbers and doing dance steps. I mean, I think that a choreographer is like a cinematographer in a movie. The great directors are those that are so incredibly confident in their craft that they allow a choreographer to really work with them. How does this show move? How do we transition from A to B to C? You know, how does the scene move? How can how do we bring the furniture on? With some directors, I have the freedom to work with my lighting designer about the number. As a matter of fact, my first show that I ever choreographed, which was Mambo Kings, I didn't come in. I got to work with Peggy and Jules. And Peggy and Jules, who are the master, I mean, they are like, you know, in terms of lighting, you know, when I was working with them, they lit my numbers and I wasn't happy with them. And so I said to Peggy, I was like, Peggy, can we work on this number? And she said, absolutely. We'll come in tomorrow morning and we'll work on it. So from then on, I got the carte blanche that I'm able to have a voice. And, you know, because I sort of have a vision about how the numbers, how I see the choreography, you know, the choreography and what sections I want to be lit and I want this one backlit and I don't really need to see that. I need to focus on this. Already, you know, you're beginning to understand, you know, you're working with your lighting designer or I'm working with my costume designer on, you know, I don't think he's got this costume. costumes don't work. I need a skirt that just can twirl, can make so that the turns can be seen. You know, I don't think musically, I think that if we land this piece of furniture on this count, I think that that would be more, it would be musically interesting. Again, because it's a musical, you know, it's so we're already beginning to act as a director in the show. You know, where it dances, the show must dance, the show must move, the show, if it's well staged, I think the choreographer will have a big hand in it. And so we're already working on our craft as a director. Now, great director, Dez's, the Chris's, all of those guys. You know, I haven't worked with some other ones, but these great directors, they know how to guide the writer. They have a dramaturgical mind. They know how to guide the writers. They figure out how to communicate with them, how to get them. Because it's really not about just getting to show up. There's so much work that comes before you even get to the first rehearsal. And that is a relationship between the director and the writer. And that is something that, you know, I continue to learn from by watching, by working with these great directors. So that's a craft that, you know, for me, I think is important to learn. And I think young choreographers don't understand that that is a big, huge part of it. And again, in the community, they don't understand that. So what is great about people like Robbins? Well, I think Fosse, Bennett, and some of the contemporary ones right now, like Casey Nicola, Jerry Mitchell, who are director choreographers. I think what those guys have gotten is that they've understood what kind of material they're good at. I think they've honed in on the tone of the shows and the kinds of stories that they know they can tell. And Fosse knew that if he could take a story like Pippin, but figure out a concept and a way into it, and how to, he just, and so it was all of those stories were dark. All of those stories had his trademark, and it's all Fosse, but he knew how to take Cabaret to Charity. You know, they have tonally, they're all the same. But Susan Stroman as well. Susan Stroman knows how to do that. She knows the kind of stories you can tell, and she was very good at it. So I think it's really figuring out, again, for me, it's understanding. For me, is I want to take stories that where dance is a big character, is a big driving force in it.
Such a smart and insightful comment. And it talks about, again, the business mind of the artist in knowing this is what I'm really good at. So I'm going to focus on this thing, and that's going to get me the most success. It's just like you saying, I'm going to go to Toronto. And I think you're so right, because I know so many artists out there that, oh, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to just do this, this, this. It's actually much better off that you turn down something that you're not right for, because you probably won't do a great job at it. This goes for me in producing as well. So very insightful. What do you think generally is the current state of dance on Broadway right now as opposed to when you started here 30 years ago? How are we doing?
You know, it's fierce. I'm very, very excited about what's happening right now. And I think a lot of that has to do with, I think what there's this movement that began with dance on television. It began with So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars. You know, dance has sort of taken the backseat for a while, but I think that, and also what it's done is it's given the inspiration, the accessibility to younger audiences. I mean, one of my little nieces is a dancer, and I went to see her dance concert a couple of years ago, and I was blown away by the number of male dancers that were at her dance school. There was a piece that they did where they had 21 boys dancing on stage from the ages of 8 to like 21, and that you don't see that in any dance schools, and that was because they've been watching television now. So I think that also because of social media, there is accessibility to what other people are doing, what other choreographers are doing. And dance is evolving really rapidly. Like, the stylistically has moved into this other stratosphere. It's what the kids are doing, the way they're moving. And there are people that, you know, sort of turn their back on it because, you know, they're not going through the training to go into SAB or going to ballet class or studying endless hours in a dance studio. It's a sort of different approach to dance. But people like Andy Blankenbuehler, you know, Andy who's bringing this sort of fresh vocabulary to Broadway. You know, he's sort of figured out a way of taking hip hop, but creating his own sense of style. He's making it accessible for younger audiences. But it's also other younger choreographers are looking at somebody like Andy or even somebody like myself and saying, you know what? I can do that. And so I feel like there is a freshness to the material, to the language that the choreographers are bringing to the work. I think that there is more dance on Broadway. At least I'm hoping. So I haven't seen Frozen, but I know Robbie Ashford, he's a good friend of mine, and I know he's going to put a lot of dance in it. I'm sure Casey's going to do a lot of dance in Mean Girls. I'm going to put a lot of dance in. There's a lot of fierce dancing in Summer. What else? I haven't seen. I'm looking forward. Oh, and your choreographer in Once on This Island. Who's a concert choreographer who I've followed for a long time, and she's fierce. So, you know, it's a big component where a few years ago we had taken a back seat, and you know, and it's very exciting. I think it's an important time.
All right, so that will segue perfectly into my last question, which is my genie question. So you just talked about how great the state of dance is on Broadway. I want you to imagine the genie from Casey Nicholas' Aladdin comes to visit you and says, Sergio, I want to thank you for your incredible passion for the theater and your dedication to this industry and all the stuff you've done and are going to do, because I have no doubt in my mind personally that you're going to be one of these director choreographies that we all want to work with. So what is the one thing, if this genie gave you one wish, what's the one thing you'd ask this genie to wish away from Broadway? What's the one thing that drives you crazy, gets you upset, makes you angry, just, oh, if only this were different, Broadway would be a much better place. What would you ask the genie?
I said, genie, build more theaters. I think that there is an unfortunate lack of space for us to be able to showcase the talents and the works of other less fortunate producers that are not able to raise all of the capital that need to be raised for the multi-million dollar musicals that are smaller musicals. I mean, there's such competition. And now with the big, you know, with the big shows that are going to be around for even longer, I mean, shows are staying around, I mean, are staying, you know, running for longer periods of time.
Well, I would agree with that. As a producer with a line of shows that are looking to come in, I think that's a very good wish. Broadway is getting bigger, so we should expand.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's a billion dollar, 1.62 billion? Is that those are not right numbers around?
Yes.
I mean, last year, $1.62 billion. So I don't understand why the city's not investing in. Each time one of these big apartment complexes or buildings goes up, I mean, I feel like this should be sort of, the city should invest in what we do. I think, I mean, if it's one of, I mean, it is such important part of the tourist attraction. I think that the city should give back.
Well, you've heard that, all you politicians out there listening, or for those of you listening, forward that to your New York City or New York State political leader. Thank you so much for being here. It was really terrific having you.
I'm wonderful. Thank you. I'm very proud of you as well.
Thanks.
With your success.
Thank you. And thanks to all of you for listening. We will see you next time this spring. Go see Summer and go see Jersey Boys now off Broadway.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening. And just a reminder, if you want to check out that webinar on co-producing on Broadway, if it's something you're interested in learning more about, drop me an email at ken@theproducersperspective.com. That's ken@theproducersperspective.com. We'll send you a link. Have a great day.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.